Today with I brought our legislative director, Ben Johnson. Opportunity today to sort of provide just a quick overview to remember sort of our function and mission, and then get into the specifics as it relates to our initiatives and priorities for this session.
Mr. Chair?
Mission statement.
Mr. Chair? Could we speak in the mic, please? Thank you.
Our mission statement actually has changed slightly since I presented before. We expanded to include veterans, their families, dependents, survivors, and to provide them with the federal and state care and benefits that they have earned. So it's a little bit expanded, but it really is in line with what we've been doing for years. I just wanted to make sure it was captured in our mission statement going forward. Our context of what we do within our agency is to serve the 308,000 veterans that are currently in Minnesota. That number is actually dropping since I was here last year with my testimony. I think we're at 318, so we're losing about 10,000 veterans per year, just to give you an idea of the folks that we're working with. We do run the five veterans homes, four of them being skilled care and one being domiciliary. We also have an adult daycare center that's located in Minneapolis. We have strong relationships, of course, with the Veterans Affairs at the federal level and the veteran service organizations through the Commander's Task Force and the county veteran service officers and a myriad of 501c3s.
Commissioner?
Yes.
As we're going forward, do you want to take questions as we go, or do you want to wait till the
end?
I
think we can take questions as we go.
Okay.
I think that'd be
all
fine.
Right. Thank you. I haven't seen anybody raise their hand yet, but I do have one. You said you talked about losing 10,000 vets per year. How does that bode for some of our veterans' homes and other things in the long-range plan, taking a look at that down the road?
Although I haven't, we haven't put together our long-range plan as it relates to the entire agency since I've only been on for a year, I can tell you I did have a study that was actually initiated when I first came on to answer the question about the homes. I wanted to make sure that we had the locations that we had been selected by the legislature would be viable into the future. What the study had found out is that there'll be quite a few veterans that are going to be of the eligible age. We serve mostly, our average age is 82 and a half years old in the healthcare area, and that's the group that actually is getting larger now out of all the groups that we're working with. We actually have more veterans, I believe, over the age of 65 now than we have below. So the outlook looked very good for both the locations and the number of beds that we have a capacity to go up to 1,058, and with the expansion of the new homes, it'll bring us to 1,022. And I think we're about right on with the number of beds. We could use a few more beds, I think, probably in the seven-county metro area going forward, but I think in greater Minnesota, we'll be serving the veterans well for Minnesota by the placement of the three new veterans' homes. And I can share that study with you also.
Thank you, Commissioner. That'd be good if we could see that study at some point in time. Thank you.
And with that, I'm going to hand it over to Ben Johnson for the policy initiatives.
Welcome, Mr. Johnson.
Chair Eklund, members of the committee, Ben Johnson. I'm the legislative director for the State Department of Veterans Affairs. Thank you for the opportunity to talk to you and your members a little bit about what our plans are for this upcoming session, some items that we're seeking your support in moving forward during the second half of this biennium. I'm going to walk through our policy proposals. These are items that we've been working on over the last year or so. There's some that you might recognize from last year as well. These are not in order of importance or in terms of priorities 1 through 5. They are simply laid out in the manner that we had submitted them. So I'm going to talk through each of these in turn, and at your direction, I'm happy to take questions while we go or hold them till the end and follow up. So those who are maybe not familiar with the Minnesota GI Bill, it is a program that was established in 2007 to add an additional $10,000 worth of educational benefits for veterans pursuing higher education in the state of Minnesota. This is above and beyond federal VA provided benefits for education. And over the years, we've been successful in adding programs to the group of initiatives that are available for veterans to be using the GI Bill benefits for in the state of Minnesota. So supporting them in securing full-time living wage employment does not necessarily mean that they can only be pursuing higher education opportunities. And we heard loud and clear that OJT and apprenticeship are areas where we can support veterans in securing good employment and long-term living wages. Licensing and certification items where if you need a license to do your job but may not have the money to take the exam, to use the Minnesota GI Bill to fund the cost of preparing for and passing that exam, whether it be nursing or the practice of law, something in medicine. So the legislature heard us loud and clear and went through the process of adding these new uses to the Minnesota GI Bill program. Unfortunately, there are some opportunities that were not taken to clarify those eligibility requirements. So what we're seeking this year are, in essence, technical corrections to the language of the Minnesota GI Bill. So within 197.791, what we're looking to do is make it clear that eligibility for something like an OJT or an apprenticeship role is not contingent on higher education or the pursuit of a degree. Similarly, you should not necessarily be doing OJT and apprenticeship and have the eligibility for that, the contingency for using the Minnesota GI Bill to take a licensing exam. So pretty straightforward, cleaning up and adding explicit language about eligibility for these programs to make it clear that anyone pursuing programs other than straight higher education, that the Minnesota GI Bill can be used for those purposes as well. The Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs is able to make dental care available to the residents of our veterans' homes. And I will note that at the federal VA healthcare level, eligibility for dental care is limited to a very small cross-section of veterans, including veterans who receive money for service-connected dental disability or those who are 100% service-connected for any condition. Veterans who are prisoners of war, recently discharged from active duty, or that didn't have their dental treatment completed can receive dental care through the VA. Within our homes, we make dental care available, but it is not a requirement and is not something that we currently it is something that we are currently offering, but want to make it clear that the commissioner has the ability to retain employees whose job is to provide dental care to the residents of our homes. We were tasked with making it explicit that this is something that we can offer to our residents rather than just making it available. So we've got a bill drafted that will allow us to make that directly to the residents of our homes with the goal of making sure that we take care of the geriatric dentistry needs of our residents.
Excuse me, Mr. Johnson. Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Johnson, I visited the Minneapolis home when you had the opening of the dental clinic there. Now, that was internally financed, and also did other outside monies come in to help get that established? And will you be able to do that with some of the other veterans' homes?
Chair, Representative Detmer, the goal is to make sure that the business model that was in place for the facility that you visited when we opened, it was developed with grants from outside support, veteran service organizations, and I think Delta Dental of Minnesota. The goal is to make sure that we can provide the same kind of care to the veterans' homes rather than the mobile dental care that we are currently utilizing. But at present, we want to make sure that the process is clean and that what we're doing at Minneapolis is repetitive to the other homes as well.
And, Mr. Chair, as a quick follow-up, in your mind, do you think it's been a very successful addition to the Minneapolis home? And what's some of the feedback you're getting from the residents there and the staff, too?
Mr. Chair, Representative Detmer, the feedback that we received has been very good from the family members. Before, it was quite, for many of these folks, it was difficult to get into the chair, into the van, off sometimes a very distant location to get dental care, and a lot of it just being preventative in nature. What we found is many of the work that we're doing now at Minneapolis has really helped to the quality of life for sure, but I'm thinking over time here we're actually going to get an extension in life for ability to do more with your life as you're coming as it relates to the veterans that are physically there. But the, it's been a very positive from the family members. It's been appreciated, I know, by the veterans themselves. And the feedback I received from the actual caregivers, the dental caregivers themselves, is that the conditions are much better than they were, and they aren't contributing to other second and third order effects to the health care of the actual veterans themselves.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah.
Our next initiative for this year will be to secure, we would like to secure statutory authority to be sharing data from the Homeless Veterans Registry. At present, we're working under the purview of the Minnesota's plan to prevent and end homelessness under the Minnesota Interagency Council on Homelessness. The challenge that we face with the data that we have in our Homeless Veterans Registry is that we are simply not able to be nimble when there's an opportunity to find housing for a veteran. If we have to track them down and secure permission to share their data with a landlord or a potential landlord. And actually, I would like to invite the commissioner to talk a little bit about this, because I think it's something that we identified last year and is really have turned things around in terms of identifying opportunities for housing, but this is a significant challenge for us as well. So, sir.
Mr. Chairman, this has been a very positive achievement. We're now in registry version 2.0, which has an extraordinary amount of information provided by the veteran, and the veteran actually opts into the registry. They're basically saying, I want, and I counted the number of between the local governments and so forth that are working towards those veterans, up to 55 different groups and organizations that are working towards their on their behalf. And what we've seen is an extraordinary increase in the number of placements that we've had working, putting the landlords together and the Housing Link, the third party that we actually are working with. We've been able to go from 300 and some placements per year, where last year we were at over 500, we were at 536 veterans that we were able to help. I suspect this next year will be well over 600 in order for us to be the fourth state in the union to become, to indicate that we've been at functional zero for homelessness for our veterans. And that's where we want to be as a state. And without this, there's no way we would have been able to get there. And when I briefed the Minnesota Interagency Councils on homelessness, they're looking at our model actually to work on the chronic homelessness within the state and to start working those as each as an individuals. And I really think that's the way that you're successful. So we just, in this case, like a little support to be able to share information, especially with some of our other sister agencies and so forth, so we can bring them more into the fold and to work together.
And to be clear, the goal here is to make sure that it is clear that the private data on that registry is private and can only be shared for the use of ending a veteran's episode of homelessness. We're not trying to share data beyond the scope of those who we're working with to secure stable housing for veterans. We anticipate that this might be concerning, but I want it to be fully obvious in that the goal is to make this data private only shareable within the confines of ending a veteran's period of homelessness. Similar to our request to be able to provide dental services to veterans, we also want to have explicit statutory authority to be operating the adult daycare center at the Minneapolis Veterans Home. At present, we are operating it underneath the purview of other programs that the commissioner is allowed to operate. But we went through the OLA audit a number of years ago, and one area that they identified is that we needed to be a little more strict in how we developed the process for charging a fee, or who can come in, or whether or not the commissioner has statutory authority to operate the adult day center. So what this would do is make it explicit that we have the ability to operate the adult day, and that we can continue to seek reimbursement from the feds and operate the adult day center there. I think at some point we would like to understand how best to serve veterans in the communities, and this is one area that we've been exploring to keep veterans in their homes as long as possible, but offer them respite and their caregivers respite by having them do a drop-off at the adult day center so that we can provide some care during the day, and their home caregiver, their spouse typically, can get out and do the things that they need to do as well.
Mr. Johnson, has MDVA found any trouble placing veterans in any of these adult daycare centers that are around the community? Is there resistance in that, or?
Chair, I don't know that we do placement in other adult daycare options within the community. We're managing the one on the Minneapolis campus.
I misunderstood you.
So yes, the goal is to take full advantage. The federal VA understands what this is, and we'd like to make sure that we're operating it within the confines of statute, and that we're successful in making this a model that can be potentially replicated. But the first things first, we want explicit authority to be operating it.
Thank you.
And finally, the Veterans Restorative Justice Act, House File 998, which I know that the chair is intimately familiar with, and I hope those in the room are also, is something that the governor has encouraged and supported MDVA supporting going forward. This was not an agency initiative last year. It is one this year, which means it's got our full support, and working to make sure that the Restorative Justice Act, which was successfully managed right up to a conference committee last year, gets through the finish line this year. So we're working with the state public defender, we're working with the courts, we're working with members of the Hennepin County Attorney's Office, Ramsey County Attorney's Office, those places where we have successful veterans courts, to make sure that those options are available statewide, so those communities in greater Minnesota can make available to veterans in greater Minnesota the same kinds of access to restorative justice that those veterans living in the metro area can secure.
Jim Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Johnson. Last year, the Veterans Restorative Justice Act was a pre-plea, and now they present, now it's a post-plea. Could you explain what's going on with that?
Chair, Representative Detmer, my understanding is that it has been a post-plea sentencing option, that part of the process was a determination of eligibility was made only after a demonstration of the tie to something suffered during service. You can actually tie an action to something that the service member experienced while they were in the military. To my understanding, has always been a post-plea, that in order to get the benefit of a Restorative Justice Act, they had to come forward and say, yes, this thing happened, and here's why. So I don't recall it being a change, but I would defer to the chair to answer the detail. I don't recall it being pre-plea. Sorry.
And Representative Detmer, I don't recall that either. As far as my understanding, it's always been post-plea, and it's modeled similar to what we have with our drug and alcohol courts. Is what it's modeled after.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. And a follow-up question. I know you mentioned that you've met with the courts, some of the different counties. Have you met with the Supreme Court Justice, Chief Court Justice Gildy, on this whole process?
Chair Eklund, Representative Detmer, I was not in the meeting where this information was provided to the Chief Justice, but I will note that there was the opening of a veterans court in southeastern Minnesota covering about 8 different counties. And she was the keynote speaker at both of the ribbon cuttings, and there were 2 separate events in 2 ends of the district. And she spoke in strong terms about the need for this kind of an opportunity for veterans. She was very supportive of it. Obviously, there's concerns about costs being passed along to courts to expand something. There is no creation of new veterans courts per se. It's the sentencing guidelines that are in place. But the courts are always in a tough spot for money. So the concern that I've heard expressed is we need to make sure that the courts can function, whether or not there's a new kind of sentencing available for veterans that are justice involved.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know that both the chair and I have met with her, and she seemed to be really interested in what's going on here with the courts and what they can do to help our veterans. And I've sat in on the Ramsey County Veterans Court, and if you haven't done that, you should try to do that. Sit in on a court. I've sat in on Washington County. It has a little bit different court system there, but I've sat in on one of their hearings also. Thank you.
Representative Grossel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess I just want to ask while they plan to refer veterans with drug abuse or mental health services in, let's say, like your more rural and remote counties, like Clearwater.
Chair Eklund, Representative, the language of the proposed bill includes a reference to work with county veteran service officers and VA systems to make sure that those programming options that are available are taken advantage of. We don't want to create new programming where existing programming exists, and we think that the counties know best how to address a veteran's issues to get them into the VA system if need be. So there's an actual call out to the county veteran service officers that they would be looped in on any treatment plans to make sure that the veteran can be successful in essence a probationary period where the court holds the plea, you go get the help that you need, and then come back and demonstrate that you've successfully met these conditions, and we can get rid of this charge and get you on your way. So we do defer to the counties and say these are your veterans in these communities in greater Minnesota. The metro area counties have a lot of resources in place already and existing veterans courts. Greater Minnesota, we want to take advantage of the expertise in the CVSO community.
Please proceed.
And with that, I'll turn it back over to the commissioner. Next up, we'll give you a preview of what we're going to be seeking in terms of capital investment and asset preservation going forward.
Mr. Chairman, committee, I've had an opportunity to be at the home several times now, and my capacity previous to this was construction facilities management officer for the Department of Military Affairs. I've had quite a bit of experience in this area, and I've had an opportunity to witness firsthand, you know, the condition of our buildings. What I can tell you is that the greater Minnesota homes, for the most part, are doing quite well. It was difficult for me to find significant issues for Fergus Falls and also with Laverne. There are some issues up in Silver Bay, and I'll talk to those in a moment. But the thing I noticed the most was the lack of security within the facilities, and that security was both exterior to the building and also interior. I found challenges with key control in that the same keys have been used for up to 25 years. They've had multiple people working at the location without good recovery practices. I've had also a challenge where I've taken a look at just you know, where their fencing is, where their standoff is, where the ability to, you know, harden some areas, maybe like an entryway, to make it appropriate, you know, for both people wanting to come into the facility, but also just as important here to keep our veterans within the facility itself. I found a lot of the security cameras were outdated, and many of them didn't work, and there was many cameras that were probably in the wrong locations. What we're seeking here is statewide security upgrades of the four greater Minnesota homes. This would not include Minneapolis. For the first item, the second item is asset preservation, and a list of quite a few items throughout the state, but these are mostly the failing and the items that are in poor condition. And last is a specific request for a greenhouse at Fergus Falls. Go to the next slide. The campus security upgrades is about a little over $1 million per home. Again, it's going to be physical security. It's going to be adjusting layouts, fencing, main entry, reworking some main entries. One of the challenges we've had that I was not aware of is we've actually had challenges with spouses of our workers, so we're concerned about both them coming to the facility being a situation where they're, you know, taking out the anger or whatever they have, an ability because they know that their ex-spouse or their spouse is working at a certain time. The other thing I notice is a lot of our parking areas are not included as part of the security system, so I'd like to include that to also broaden our area that we're looking at throughout our facilities. Under asset preservation, we had a larger request in. Request for $10.7 million will be focused primarily on Minneapolis. There's several buildings on Minneapolis that need help and attention. There's one building on Hastings specifically, Building 25, which I need some immediate attention to. And then I have also, we have our facility up at Silver Bay, which we had bid out and designed the replacement of the HVAC system there, and it came in well over budget where we thought it was going to be, and so we needed some additional money there to replace the aging 1930s boiler system that's currently in place there. We did look at alternatives there, and we found that the one selected in the design is probably the best. The last item, the Fergus Falls Greenhouse, the community there has been very generous in providing donations. They had donations of about $100,000 now that they've received from many different organizations over the past few years. Their original concept up there was to do a kit-like greenhouse, and because it was going to require electricity and water and some of the other things, we think it's best that it's we implement it through the Department of Administration and treat it like any other construction. In this case, we'd be asking for a match to the money that's been provided by the community and by the veteran service organizations, and the total project would be $200,000 with $100,000 coming from the community itself.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Detmer.
Thank you. And I'll say this with a tongue in cheek regarding the what you are requesting up in Fergus Falls. As you know, Representative Norness is retiring, and you might want to maybe hire him. He's got a great voice, and before being in the legislature, he was a radio announcer. So if you need any good voices up there, I'm sure Representative Norness would help you out. So.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Detmer, I'll keep that in mind. Thank you very much for the insight.
Representative Heinrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Commissioner, you mentioned so the for the security upgrades at it was $4.2 million for the four out-of-state facilities. Is the Minneapolis facility that's essentially up to snuff? The camera systems had been upgraded, the key cards, the other things that you mentioned, you're not dealing with those same issues at that facility. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Representative, my original request did have Minneapolis included. I can tell you that Minneapolis has the most modern especially camera systems. You can actually tell what color shirt someone's wearing and if they have a baseball cap on or not and what sex they are and so forth. I would say Minneapolis is not perfect, especially in the area of key control. The problem with Minneapolis is a much bigger situation, and the request for that would have been almost equal to the amount for the greater Minnesota homes. So there will be probably a follow-on request that we'll be asking for in the future for Minneapolis. The other reason I went with the greater Minnesota homes, I do have active security at Minneapolis 24/7, so that's a bit more comforting there than it is in the greater Minnesota homes, where I do not have 24/7 security at those locations.
Thank you. One follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Representative Heinrich.
Thank you, Commissioner, for that. That was actually my next question as far as what personnel. So at the other facilities, though, there is no security personnel actually at the facility there?
Mr. Chairman, or Mr. Representative, yes, there is no personnel currently. The way I'm going to set this up, though, is that if a situation warranted it for either a short period of time, we could bring somebody in, and the facility would be prepared for basically a station for that person, not that they could actually have the hand controls and be able to move things and so forth. Right now, there is nothing in the greater Minnesota homes for that, so I'm going to have that capability. I figure even if there isn't a security person there, the staff could utilize it. Whoever the senior person is on staff could utilize it for their use, even if there's not an active security person on staff.
And Mr. Chair, one more.
Representative Heinrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Commissioner. So the camera systems that would be going in would be able to be a staff person could sit there and manipulate those systems, maybe like you mentioned, color and a Zoom function as well. And is that so? That's what Minneapolis has right now, is somebody that's kind of dedicated to watching those camera systems.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, yes. Right now, there's a station. Actually, as you move into the Building 19 at the current Minneapolis home, just off to your left, there's a welcome desk, but just to the left or to the right of them is a security individual. And when they're not on patrol in the car or whatever, that's their duty station. So we'd be developing something like that that could be, again, used by either staff or an active security personnel at the other homes.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And committee, we'll just let you know we have about 5 minutes left on this presentation before we get to the next couple, so please proceed.
I think the slide up here shows our current locations that we have the homes. I did want to make, I think just in the last year, we brought Duluth on as a cemetery. We did get feedback on our Redwood County request for the federal VA for the grants request. We were not approved. We were at the cut line for that, so we're going to be asking again in the upcoming year to be considered for that. Everything's in place for that. And also, with the three new homes, we are waiting for the response on that. We believe that that will come. We originally told in January, but now we think it's going to probably be in March. The good news is that they're going, my understanding is they're going through last year's grants that were not fully executed or not executed right away. And there might be some redistribution of those fundings, which would actually be good for us, since we have three requests that are currently pending for the three new homes. Yeah, I think we'll just go through that. And the FCAs I went through. I did want to just stop here under current conditions. Overall, our the green to the right, I know this is hard to see, but the green to the right is showing buildings that are in excellent condition. We're getting more and more of our buildings that are in the good condition, so I wanted to say that your work, that the money you've provided us in the past is actually moving more things away from that red and that orange area, and we are moving more of our buildings into the good area, and that the money, the $10 million that we're asking for this year will get rid of much of the unacceptable or failing items that we have going forward. And this is the next one is a summary of the requests and what city and counties they would actually influence, so that you have that for your reference. And the greenhouse, lastly, will be a really nice greenhouse. They want to use the greenhouse to not only, they want to have some fresh food physically there, but they see this as a way to interact with the youth. They get quite a few youth at this location that come, and a lot of the veterans are farmers, and they would like to teach the youth how to actually grow items and have something that they can do, interact together. So it'll have two purposes. It'll provide fresh food for the table, and it'll also provide a method to interact with other generations. And I think we'll stop with that. I'll just ask if there's any questions at this
point. Thank you, Commissioner. And Mr. Johnson, any further questions for the Commissioner? Well, I appreciate what you guys are doing to make the lives of our veterans better. So we, you know, from this committee, we appreciate it. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. We're going to change the agenda a little bit. Major General Jensen is a little bit late, and we can let the general be late. So this next group is the presentation from the Student Veterans Association of Minnesota. I met these gentlemen last fall. They invited me to an event they had at the University of Minnesota campus, and I was pretty impressed with what they're trying to do and what their goals are. So I asked them to come to the committee and talk to us for a few minutes. So, gentlemen, welcome, and please identify yourselves for the committee.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for having us. I'm Jonathan Sudage.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. I am Joshua Gerber.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. I am Jonathan Salazar.
And we have all branches here represented at this table, so you should probably let us know what you served in also.
I served in the Army from 2007 to 2017.
I was in the United States Marine Corps from 2013 to 2017.
And I was in the United States Marine Corps from 2011 to 2015.
A couple of jarheads here, Representative Heinrich.
Hurrah. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So please proceed.
Mr. Chair and committee, thank you for letting us speak with you today. We are the Student Veterans Association. We are here to talk about who we are, our Veteran Transition Center on campus, the programs that we run in our association, the successes we've had so far, and what we plan to do moving forward. So we are a passionate group on campus. We are the only group that is veteran-ran. We support and advocate for the higher learning of student veterans on campus, helping them transition from military life into academia and civilian life. And we do that while also trying to build a strong community and relationship with the other students on campus.
So our group dynamic, we provide a space that gives everyone an opportunity to talk to each other. We use a lot for studying, that kind of a thing. We have unique experiences as veterans on campus, so having this space allows us to talk to other veterans or other service members, and we can build camaraderie through those experiences. We use it as opportunities to network within the school, within the group that we have, and with the community at large. And again, one of our main focuses is transitioning from military life to academia and civilian life, which can be a challenge. What we offer is free printing, which is great at the University of Minnesota because it's like 10 cents a page. A lounge area for you to relax between classes or after classes. An open space, entertainment. So we have a lot of DVDs and TV. And then we also offer snacks and refreshments.
So one of our main programs that we have is our weekly networking event. It allows our members to come in once a week, enjoy some food that's provided. We also bring in the guests from the community. We'd like to extend an invitation to anybody here that would be interested in coming on campus. Just let us know. We just asked if you have 5 minutes to talk to the veterans. On top of that, we also, as officers, use that as a time to give out some information about upcoming events that we are planning and any information that we think the veterans should know. The other program that we put on is the Veterans Appreciation Event. On campus, we like to celebrate what veterans do, and we provide this event where we bring in a bunch of, that's where we met Chairman Eklund. It helps us reach out to veterans on campus. More of them show up to that than what they do to our weekly events. And we can use it to help remove some of the stereotypes with veterans on campus.
So community engagement is something we're definitely pushing for this year. We attended the VFW conference in January. We made a lot of great connections there with groups that like to work with veterans and give them spaces and time outside of your normal work life and school life. We also hold a position on the University of Minnesota Veterans Advisory Board, which gives us a say in how veterans are treated on campus. We also encourage active participation in the VFW, which is a really big issue for veterans of our era. The VFW is aging in general, and the post 9/11 veterans tend to be underrepresented in those groups, and we're trying to change that.
Mr. Chairman, committee, the current successes of our group are we plan to do more, but during our networking events, we managed to get guest speakers that include either representatives from the VA or local employers that are looking for veterans in their companies, and many of our current members are pursuing degrees that they're looking for in students. And then we have our fundraising events that range from we sell shirts with our association's logo on them, and our 5K that we are going for our second year now, hosting with another student group on campus. We also host the Veterans Appreciation Event, which is a running event for the last couple years. The improvements we look forward to making is growing our student group, making ourselves more known to the other student veterans on campus so they can come in and we can help out everyone that's transitioning from the military life, and also growing our female veteran cohort within our group as it is a bit underrepresented.
Second, Representative Miller, you had a question?
I can wait until they're done.
Okay.
So moving forward, some of the goals our group has is working to create a 5K, where it's called the Strides in Solidarity, where we are partnered with Partners in Health, another student group on campus. It's just going to be a 5K where the proceeds will go to between the two groups. Next year, looking forward, we're trying to tailgate the military appreciation football game, where veterans and military members are given free tickets. So we are looking to partner with the Uptown VFW to tailgate that. We're also looking to actually do a partnership with the VFW, something that we think could benefit both. It would give us a larger crowd to fundraise to, more exposure that way. We do find it a little harder to fundraise on campus. So that would give us more there. And then also, we want to allow them to look for members inside our community. And another thing is we are a local chapter of the Student Veterans of America, and we're working with them to improve our organization moving forward. So when the current leadership and the current officers leave and the next rotation comes in, they'll be set up better to continue what's going on. And that is all we have. Do we have any questions?
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple of quick questions. But before I say, you know, I know that we say to our veterans, thank you for your service, and we mean that. But seeing the three of you sitting there, you want to make sure that you understand thank you, okay? You gave a lot of your youth to this nation, and that does not fall on silent on this committee. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your support.
My two quick questions for you is number one, how are you guys funded? Just a simple breakdown. You don't have to give me a brief.
We are funded mainly through the Student Activities Office. We pitch ourselves as a group to them every semester to attain programming funding.
Okay, good. And I think you probably get some support from some VFWs and other places like that. And that's actually my second question is, you are right, the service groups like the VFWs are aging, I think that your generation and the population that's seen the war in the last several years could benefit from that. What would your suggestions be of what VFWs and what American Legions could do to attract the younger veterans?
So this is a conversation we've been having with the VFW, and we really don't have an answer because we're kind of battling with the same stuff on campus. We're finding that a lot of veterans our age don't want to be known as veterans on campus. So outreaching to them is something that we're battling with too, but we're looking at doing more events that we think veterans would be interested in going to. Like our partnership with the VFW is allowing us to have a location where we can be veterans, more so as if we can't do anything. Offering a veteran a beer is going to go further than some pizza on campus, and the VFW is allowing us to kind of do that, and that's where we're going with our trying to get veterans there. So.
Okay, good. One quick follow-up question.
Representative Miller.
If I could, thank you, Mr. Chair. I should have written this down because I want to make sure that I said it right. You said one of the challenges you have on campus is that people don't want to be known as a veteran on campus. Can you tell me why?
Mr. Chair and Representative Miller, the experiences that we go through in the military and when we come out, we, in my experience, and I talk to other people, it's a transition phase. We just left a place that's rigorous and stressful on the daily, and when we come out to, there is a stigma, just like the students have, but what we have amongst each other, that we're built the same way as we were when we're inside, but our group is trying to tear that down to say that we're just trying to transition back and slow down that military pace and just work on ourselves to help build our own futures together. And the military does leave. It's a prominent part of our experience, and I don't put it against anyone who isn't ready yet to experience other veterans or talk with other veterans. So we just try our best to help transition, help them by creating events to let them know that it's okay to, you know, talk with others.
Mr. Chair, just one more. I apologize with this. I think we're going down something here. Can you give me your opinion, Mr. Chair? Thank you. I mean this. Very serious question here. Is our state and is our nation taking care of you guys?
From our experiences, yes. There's always someone looking out for us, especially on campus. We have the University of Veterans Services, and they're always asking us about stuff, and the university has been very good to us. So I think everything's going in the correct direction.
Okay. Thank you. Zoom Detmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and again, welcome to our committee for your service. Have you ever thought about, have you connected with the military service? I think it's Jabber Kawas on campus. I've talked to him a few times, and he's come into our MAG meeting. I know both the chair and I participate in the military action group. It's a nonpartisan group here at the Capitol. And in fact, I'd like to invite you, your group, in to maybe give a presentation to this group. It's a group from made up of people from around the state dealing with, from different agencies, the military and veterans agencies and so forth, and the University of Minnesota is usually there too. But our next meeting is February 24th, if you want to make note of that. It'll be 9 o'clock in the state office building, room usually in North, 400 North. But you can contact the chair or myself to get any more information on that, because it's important that we hear from your group, what's going on at the University of Minnesota, and for your age group. You know, I'm a retired warrant officer, 25 years, and so it's important to hear from what's going on at the University of Minnesota, and maybe why is there some people, maybe there's some groups at Minnesota that would rather not have veterans there. I don't know, but you can talk to this group and discuss your experiences. And have you been involved at all with the RLTC program there, talking to that group?
We have had our run-ins, but we tend to find that they're scared of us for some reason. we can't figure out why. They just are.
That's because Mr. Chair, yes, that's because they're going to be lieutenants and coming right out of the chute. But really, that might be a group you might want to talk to. I have twin sons that are West Point graduates. They're lieutenant colonels now, and the first thing they did when they got to their duty station was find their first line leaders, their squad leaders and battalion leaders and their first sergeants. So, but again, thank you. And check them out. Check out that ROTC program, and then come in to the MAGMITI Military Action Group to give a presentation. Thank you.
Representative Becker Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just curious, where is the VTC located on campus?
Mr. Chair,
or is it a secret?
it's located in the lower level of Johnston Hall. It's right next to the Northrop Events Center, or the building.
Yeah. Representative Becker Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just kind of curious, as a U of M grad, I was curious where they house you. We didn't have a fully operational commons building when I was a student. Also wondering with the, you know, you talked about the different events and networking. I mean, are you guys being, I assume that you are, but are you able to be really intentional of making sure that folks have access and know about different mental health resources and the different resources available to them on campus as students as well?
We work with UVS a lot to make sure that if there is something that we can pass it to our members. One thing that we have heard from our members and also our Donna, our VA representative, is that she's only able to come on campus once a semester. And we just have been having requests to get that brought up. And I think that's one of our resources that we're really trying to get involved with right now.
Let us know if there's a way, you know, if there are issues. I mean, I'm sure there are lots of folks here that want to make sure you guys have the resources to the right people. If there's problems with that, please don't be afraid to reach out to folks who want to help you guys be successful at the good work you're doing. Thank you.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. excuse me, go back 50 years, and we had a veterans organization up at Mississippi State University. I think Representative Detman might have been part of that, too, back in the day. But we understand what you're talking about, and folks that don't necessarily appreciate your military service, we saw some of that after Nam. But my comment to you, we started a program up at Bemidji State on tutoring for veterans, and was veterans tutoring veterans. You know, that helps, right? So do you have that available to you?
Veterans tutoring veterans, not specifically veterans for veterans, but we do have tutoring stuff that's available for the university. And then with the veterans coming into the VTC, we have majors all across the board. So if you have a question, someone's usually able to answer it.
We don't have an official tutoring program, but there's a lot of peer-to-peer help, even across majors like computer science or math. We take a lot of the same things, a lot of linear algebra, that kind of thing. So there's a very large peer-to-peer engagement as far as tutoring and working through all the problems that you might have or help with homework.
Well, that's what I'm getting at, Mr. Chair. There was a program that you know, most of us, even we had GI Bill, we still had to have a job in order to survive, right, and pay bill. So they paid veterans to be tutors. There was a program to do that, and it was helpful to this veteran, I'll tell you. So thanks for being here.
Well, gentlemen, I want to echo what Representative Miller said from all of us. Thank you for your service. We appreciate that, both your service in the military and your service to what you're doing to veterans on the campus. We appreciate you coming to the committee today. I'm going to ask the committee to take a brief recess. All committee members are going to go behind the podium. They asked for a picture so they can use for their advertising. So if we'll take a brief recess and have all of us go right behind the speakers and get a picture, and then we'll resume the committee. So thank you.
They got a camera that will do that, Mr. Chair? That would be a pretty tough camera.
Thanks for having us. Thank you very much.
Oh, yeah. That's fine. I'm doing everything. Straighten it out. Next on the agenda, Major General John Jensen, Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, and Don Kerr, Executive Director of Minnesota Department of Military Affairs, to give us an overview of where they're at on things. Major General, welcome. Mr. Kerr, welcome.
Mr. Chair, thank you for the welcome, and also thank you, so much to you and to the entire committee for the flexibility you had today, allowing me to speak at the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council before speaking here. So I deeply appreciate that. As Mr. Kerr brings up our slides, he's not sure that they're there, but I'll just continue to talk until Mr. Kerr catches up with us all. And I believe the committee also has slides.
We have the program, General. So
we'll okay. Again, good afternoon, Chair Eklund and members of the committee. As introduced, Major General John Jensen. I'm the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard and the Commissioner of the Department of Military Affairs. I'm here today to provide you an update with the department's priorities for this year and a brief summary of the current and future activities of the Minnesota National Guard. First of all, thank you for your support with the agency's budget and the committee's support to our veterans and service members. We really appreciate the backing that we receive generally from the people of Minnesota, and we know we are fortunate to have it. Our priorities this year are very simple. We have requested 4 capital investment projects as part of the governor's bonding initiative. And though we understand that this is outside the purview of this committee, we want to inform you because these improvements are vital to the readiness of the Minnesota National Guard. Each of these projects represent the state funding requirement, which will in all cases be matched dollar for dollar with federal funding. The first project is to conduct a design for the renovation of the Rosemont National Guard Armory. That is slide number 2. This 28-year-old, 99,522-square-foot facility has never received a comprehensive rehabilitation. It's not compliant with ADA requirements, fire suppression, or asbestos remediation. Since this is one of our largest buildings with no others similar to it in our inventory, we have opted to split the project into a design phase, then a build phase, so that we can be more confident of our construction cost estimate. Our request for the Rosemont Armory renovation design is $1.1 million. The second project is a $5.345 million renovation of the Moorhead Readiness Center, slide number 3. The Moorhead Readiness Center is a 32-year-old, 41,218-square-foot armory that has never received a comprehensive renovation. The mechanical components are at end of life, in some cases failing, and are very inefficient by today's standards. The facility is deficient in administrative supply, arms vault, and toilet shower space. It is not compliant with force protection standards for windows and doors or current life safety and accessibility code. The third project is a comprehensive renovation of the Marshall Readiness Center, slide number 4. The Marshall facility is 64 years old, 15,438 square feet, and has never received a comprehensive rehabilitation. The facility is uninsulated, has single-pane windows, and failing exterior doors. There are no fire alarm or fire suppression systems installed in the facility, and it requires asbestos remediation. Multiple mechanical systems in the facility have failed, and the entire HVAC system is at the end of life. The arms vault is of inadequate size. The cost to the state for the renovation of Marshall is $3.25 million. The fourth and final project on our current list is the Readiness Center in Fergus Falls, slide number 5. This facility is similar in design and age to the Marshall facility at 67 years old and over 20,000 square feet. But because of some previous work that we've accomplished there, this renovation will only require $2.2 million in state funds to bring it up to code, improve the functionality of the facility, better accommodate the units assigned, and sustain the life of the facility into the future. The total request of these projects is $11.89 million, slide number 6. If members have any specific questions about the details of these projects, please reach out to our Department of Military Affairs Executive Director, Mr. Kerr, and he will get those specifics for you. Next, I want to provide you a brief update about the recent, current, and near future activities of the Minnesota National Guard, slide number 7. Last July, we gladly welcomed home over 600 soldiers from the 34th Infantry Division Red Bulls, who returned home from a very successful tour of duty in the Central Command Area of Responsibility, where they provided command and control for United States and coalition Army forces in the region. Pictured here, casing the colors of the division after their transfer authority, is Major General Ben Correll and Command Sergeant Major Chelmstead. Interesting enough, upon his return, Major General Correll was selected to serve as the Adjutant General of Iowa and is currently serving in that position. In September, we bid farewell to the nearly 700 members of the 34th Combat Aviation Brigade. This brigade headquarters, along with the 2147 Assault Helicopter Battalion and the 834th Aviation Support Battalion, are currently deployed in U.S. Central Command Area of Responsibility, supporting Operation Spartan Shield and Operation Inherent Resolve. These soldiers are providing Army helicopter, unmanned aerial systems, and fixed-wing support to United States Armed Forces and Coalition Forces. The brigade is deployed as a multi-state Army National Guard Combat Aviation Brigade, including soldiers from Iowa, Ohio, Oklahoma, Nevada, New Hampshire, Michigan, Mississippi, Montana, as well as active duty forces. Also currently deployed to the Central Command Area of Responsibility are four of our C-130s from the 133rd Airlift Wing and about 120 airmen. They are providing tactical airlift support inside that theater. Slide number 10. Next week, we will announce another large unit mobilization scheduled for June of this year. Soon after that unit departs, our aviation brigade should be coming home, but several other units are also preparing for deployment. We will share that information when it is appropriate and it's released by the Department of Defense. My last slide is a recap of the five priorities of the Minnesota National Guard. These priorities guide every decision that I make as the Adjutant General and the actions of my subordinate leaders and their units. I have given you a glimpse of the missions your soldiers and airmen are performing and some of the insights into the future operational tempo. The operational tempo today and going forward in the near term is a challenging operations tempo for our service members, for our families, and our employers, and they are challenged. But with your continued support, our soldiers, their families, and our employers, we know are up to the task. Mr. Chair, I will conclude with that, pending any questions from you or the committee. Thank you.
Thank you, General. Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and General, thanks for your presentation. In the couple of years I've been in here, and then I was on the bonding committee, I heard some of the presentations on bonding, and I've consistently heard and believed you with the priorities that you put on the spending of your dollars. And I have said publicly in this committee and on bonding committee that if our other institutions in the state of Minnesota came forward with these realistic requests, we could have good, solid bonding bills that I can support. I'm going to turn it up a notch here. It's the end of the day, so I'm probably making promises I'll regret tomorrow. Mr. Chair, you take it to your leadership. If you fully fund their requests this year, I'll vote yes on that bonding bill. If you don't, I will vote no. Okay? It comes down to this. We have agencies from all over the state of Minnesota asking for hundreds of millions of dollars on things that I don't even know exactly what they're doing. The general has come in here, and your predecessors have come in here and say, we have these needs. And they ask for the money, and then they don't get it. So I will give the support to this in this committee, and when the bonding bill comes through, and I hope that the state of Minnesota can support it as well. The legislature, thank you.
Thank you, Representative Miller. Any other questions? Well, General, thank you. And as a lowly E4, I'm always scared of generals, so you can come on my agenda at any time. So, but thank you for coming. We appreciate the update, and we look forward to working with you going down the road.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much. I appreciate it. And to the committee members, thank you so much for your continuing support of the Minnesota National Guard and our families.
Thank you. Going forward in the committee, we will be meeting again on March 3rd because of the precinct caucuses taking our time next Tuesday. If you have any veterans bills that are or for bills for the National Guard that you're thinking about putting in, let's get them in because we do have deadlines coming up. Right now, it looks like we're going to be able to meet all of our obligations without any extra committee meetings, but time will tell. So, with that, I need to introduce our new CLA, is Grace Doyle, who's the only new member of our team here, and she started working for us last summer for Representative Sandstead and myself, and she's a welcome addition to the committee. So, thank you, Grace. So, with that, we're adjourned.